What up, what up? Good morning. Welcome to Sankofa. Oh, shit. What up, what up? Good morning. Welcome to Sankofa Radio, where we journey through the past, where we stop in the present, on our journey into the future. I'm your host, Ascari Donson, with my main man, Sadiata Ray Vaughn. And today we're going to discuss the crisis in black manhood. And we're going to tackle that in our discussion. Hopefully we can get some people calling and add on. Before that, it's always, you know, it's customary that we start every show up with a dedication. And this week we're going to dedicate the show to the young brother, Jonathan Jackson. Jonathan Jackson was the brother of George Jackson, who was killed trying to free, liberate some people from a courthouse in Oakland, California, in 1970. He was young. He was 17 years old. He had a revolutionary spirit, but he loved his people, regardless of what you thought about his ideas. And he was serious. You know what I'm saying? He was striving to be a man, and that was the mindset of brothers back then around 17 years old. And so we want to talk about that today, thinking about a brother like George Jackson, Sundiata, bringing you in, thinking about a cat like that, doing something like that at the age 17 is almost unfathomable today. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Even be thinking about himself in the world, his political situation, his economic condition. To be 17 and be that dedicated, you know, that just speaks to a level of consciousness that I feel like is gone today. You know what I'm saying? I don't even see brothers 20s, 30s, 40s operating on that level. And so I guess I would start this thing off, man, asking you a question. What has happened, bro? How do we get here? You know what I'm saying? Like, why don't we have that type of consciousness of ourselves in this world today as black men?
Yeah, peace, my brother. That's a great question. I think the answer lies in the example of the individual you just gave, speaking on John Jackson. You know, at the young male, when properly educated, you know, feels that indignation, who feels that sense of injustice, it will spark, you know, the inspiration to want to change things, to be socially aware while you're young, and to be a black man and to know your place in society and the potential of where you can be, you know, can create that radical aggression or just simply manhood, being a man, standing up for what you want, believe in, and fighting for a change, you know, fighting for the freedoms and equalities that any other race has. So I think the powers that be, when they know that, because it always been the youth, it always been the younger generations who sparked the change. Younger day of did a report, the James Flynn report, as far as the IQ, the intelligence quotient, and it shows that the intelligence always increases a point every generation. And so, you know, each generation is gaining more information, more knowledge on how to do things better. So if you also add in that, you know, these social factors of inequality, that will compel these youngins to fight, you know, to stand up, to protest, challenge, and question our government and you know, these rules and regulations that set up. And so they do their best, you know, to thwart that, you know, to keep all type of distractions out here, to keep all type of hindrances and obstacles and smoke screens up to prevent the young man, young black man from seeing the truth, you know. And speaking on this, do you think, can we give historical, we speak about the crisis of the black man, can we give historical examples of crisis situations or systematic acts that sparks this this dormancy or ineptitude to want to do change or you know, oppose the government or on a righteous level, not just for the sake of wanting to oppose, but oppose some of these policies and regulations. Because a lot of people would think, oh, they go just talking, they just paranoid. So, you know, I know my brother, you're very deep in history. Can we come with some historical, actual evidence, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, from a Pan-African point of view, I try to educate and teach history from that point of view because that's how it was taught to me. And from that perspective, I feel like, you know, you always have to see things from through a holistic lens. So you can't just look at the politics historically, the economics historically, social issues. You got to bring it all together. So there's been a combination of things is where I'm going with that. You know what I mean? And so I think, like, when you think about the fact that, you know, from the very beginning, you know what I'm saying, historically black manhood has been, you know, under attack from our rival because, you know, to be a man, be a black man in America for almost 275 years meant to be subservient, meant to be a slave, you know what I'm saying, and meant to be basically an animal. And then so at the end of the Civil War, essentially, collectively, I mean, you even had free blacks, but even free blacks had, they were second-class citizens. So there was a limit on their citizenship, and by, you know, default, a limit on the way that they could practice manhood. You know, manhood being an institution of male production, let's put that out there real fast, being an institution of male production, producing a male, and that being a process that lasts from the time that you're born to the time that you die, you know, the things that you go through in this world is going to determine what happens, how that takes place. You know what I'm saying? So some of the things that have happened, man, you know, lynchings, you know what I'm saying? Mob attacks, redlining, you know what I'm saying? Systematic political underdevelopment, cultural warfare, which I feel like is the greatest attack on black manhood, is because, you know, we identify with a foreign culture. You know what I'm saying? Man, really, there's no black manhood today, really, is just, you know, white manhood for real. You know what I mean? It's just a subculture of white manhood. You know what I'm saying? We don't really have our own, definition. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, as a whole, you know what I'm saying? You have pockets. Myself, we try to produce an African or black manhood, but for the most part, you know, black men and black men ain't trying to do nothing but emulate the white man. You know what I'm saying? And so that's been the greatest attack, because to be an American male, you know, is to be anti-black. You see, and so until we come to that realization, we're not going to understand that to be an American male is to be anti-yourself. You know, that's a contradiction. That's the double consciousness the boys was talking about, you know, to be an African-American. The African and the American is in conflict. So here you are talking about black manhood in America. You can't be an African male in America and not have that tension or that conflict. And I don't want to go too far with that, but I just want to throw it out there. I want to ask you, man, I want to ask you, man, about hip-hop. You know what I'm saying? I love hip-hop. We hip-hop. You know what I'm saying? That's my generation. I'm Nas. I'm Big. I'm Pop. That's my era. But I want to ask you, Brink, thinking about that, you know what I'm saying? Do you feel like hip-hop has been used as a weapon to keep us underdeveloped? And if so, how, man? You know what I'm saying?
Man, yeah, that's a deep question. And I still go back and forth in my own mental, grappling with that concept. I think it has. I think hip hop, you know, they say there's a difference between hip hop and rap music. And initially, hip hop, you know, gave a positive message. You take it back to the early 80s, on up to the early 90s, you know, you had the cats like KRS-One and Poor Righteous Teachers and Eric B. and these brothers, they had positive lyrics. Or they inspired you to get knowledge, you know, to stand up and to have unity. And then, you know, from what I'm reading and researching, you had these corporate executives who started to invest in the prison, and that there was an actual systematic goal to change the music and influence the mass listeners of men to become more criminal, to become more self-destructive, to encourage more crime, which will lead them to prisons, because these corporations had investments in the prison. So this whole changing of what they call the gangster era, gangster rap, you know, was actually corporate scheme or plan you know, to entice the young men to commit crime and eventually go to jail where, you know, they would be marketed and these corporate executives would make money, you know. So, but in the midst of that, there was a defiance in the middle 90s where the rappers was teaching men, black men, on how to stand up and also talking about the social injustices, but it was more violent, it was more aggressive. You know, in the 80s, you know, they was humble about it, you know what I'm saying? It was, you know, still kind of passive. But in the 90s, you know, brothers was like, man, F that, you know, we coming in, y'all kept us out too long, we coming in, we taking the money, you know. Earlier, it was, we broke, we need money, this, that. But in the 90s, you know, it was more aggressive. And so those who were really outspoken, it was just like with the, just like with our leaders from back in the day, the ones who was really speaking the truth, you know what I'm saying, they found themselves being criminalized, receiving a lot of charges, in and out of jail, you know, in a way to try to silence them brothers, you know, or to tarnish their image. So I think hip-hop, it was like a double-edged sword. You know what I'm saying? It was a double-edged sword. On one end, it was used, and it is used to raise our social awareness, to raise our social consciousness about social injustices. It's like a media. It's like a news. You know what I'm saying? And it teaches us about what's going on in other cities and other neighborhoods, what the police doing, how people struggling in other neighborhoods. And then on the other hand, it's also perpetuating or really – teaching us is street knowledge. So it's teaching individuals how to survive in the streets, you know, from a poverty-stricken perspective, from being outcast and, you know, and shunned from society, the mainstream society, you know, and you have to adapt. Adaption is one of the laws of evolution. So we're going to survive. And so in the survival, we use these criminal ways. And I think the rappers are brutally honest about how they have survived and adapted to these poverty-stricken societies. And so we learn that, but in learning that, it constantly feeds the beast too, you know. So it's kind of is a double-edged sword with it, you know. On one hand, it's teaching you how to survive, but at the same time, it's also teaching us these same criminal tactics that can lead us to prison, which may have been sparked by these corporate execs in the first damn place, you know?
Yeah, that's deep, bro.
How do you see that, my brother? I would like your perspective, because that's a deep question, man.
I agree. I look at it, you know, art imitates life. You know what I'm saying? That's how I would simplify that. You know what I'm saying? Guys, this ain't fantasy rap. You know what I'm saying? This ain't fantasy rap. You know what I mean? So, the conditions got to exist for guys to rap about it. You know what I'm saying? I think the survival consciousness that you talk about goes back to what I was talking about when I was trying to sum up the history. I hate to do that about history because it's so complex and it's so expansive. Yeah. But the survival consciousness is deeply ingrained in the African that lives in America, because that's what we've had to do. You know what I'm saying? I mean, survival has been our number one goal. You know what I'm saying? We typically like to say liberation, but I don't agree with that. I think if you're a student of history, you know and understand that the plantation had to be survived. You know what I'm saying? Jim Crowism had to be survived. Lynchings had to be survived. Economic inequality had to be survived. The drug wars had to be survived. Mass incarceration, we're trying to survive it. You know what I'm saying? And so that survival consciousness, it's so prevalent in our consciousness, it's so prevalent in our community, that it almost consumes how we see everything and how we interact with the world. And that's for real. I was just checking out a queen by the name of Dr. Joy DeGraw, who talks about the negative consequences of that, you know, which is what she calls post-traumatic slave syndrome. You know what I'm saying? She says, you know, us always having to survive and adapt to so many different modes of oppression, that ultimately it had broken our spirit. And it was crazy about the queen. She did case studies all over the world. She went to Africa, the Caribbean, Canada, South America, and over here to America, and she noticed that African people everywhere, you know, shared the same negative qualities, same negative worldviews when it came to their standing in the world. You know what I'm saying? Low self-esteem, not feeling like they had, you know, any impact in the world, you know, projecting they self, they image, they people. You know what I'm saying? I mean, all of these things, you know, how am I thinking the exact way if somebody in South Africa or England, bro?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? How is that happening? You know what I'm saying? Word up. That's real. So hip-hop just reflects that. You know what I'm saying? The self-hate that you see in the music, you know what I'm saying? That's just a reflection of that, the post-traumatic slave. You know what I'm saying? And so the crisis with the black malehood, rather than summing this up real quick, is really dealing with that. And then I think we got to deal with this black masculinity thing, you know what I'm saying? Because there's an attempt, you know, and I'm not, you know, once again, I always want to qualify this. I'm not a homophobe, and I'm not trying to be controversial in that regard, but we have to be real. There has been a systemic push to make more acceptable homosexuality, okay? And I think the consequence of that with black men being taken out of the family has been that there has been a different definition of black masculinity in this era versus our era. But what I want to ask you is, how do you see, what do you see is the consequence of so many women having to raise boys without men around? You know what I'm saying? How you see, what's the consequence of that, man?
Yeah, they're becoming punks. They're becoming little young punks, man. And not being rude or mocking or scornful of the younger generations, because older generations know to do that. But, you know, from a truthful, honest perspective, when women raise men or young boys, there's a known fact that boys starts to carry on the characteristics of that parent. So if the other parent is not there, you know what I'm saying, it expresses itself in their social interactions with others. So, you know, a single parent mother, they say in sociology there's a term called poverty or feminization, where women get paid the less money, they receive more government assistance, face more discrimination in the job force. So it's even 10 times worse for the black woman. So when she come home from work, you know, she's emotional, she's irate, she may not have a man who can give her the understanding. So she's expressing all of these emotions to this young boy. And so he's learning these things from his mom because he don't have the father there to balance it out. So he's getting these feminine ways of expressing his emotions, of expressing problems and challenges that come his way. So when it comes to confrontation, you know, he's quickly to be, you know, emotional. You know what I'm saying? Nowadays, boys are, the way they're fighting, they're swinging their arms wild. It was different from my era. And then the way they dress, like women now, I see pictures all the time where they dress in their sons just like them, you know, matching outfits, you know what I'm saying? And this pampering and this baby fine, you know. And so this boy is getting this over abundance of estrogen filled love, you know, he's getting this feminine aspect, and so it's softening it. It's softening him, you know. Even the clothes have changed to where these boys is wearing tighter clothes, and just like we was building last night, you know, the type of clothes you wear produces a psychological self image of yourself, and so if you dress in a professional attire, you're going to feel professional. If you're wearing the slacks, the button-up, you're going to feel, you know, like a person of importance, like a businessman or some type of professor. You know, you wearing, you know, the baggy clothes, that will make you feel like a, you know, it made me feel like a hard youngster, you know what I'm saying? And so now...
A G, baby.
I think straight a G, you know, from the understanding that we had. And then if you wear some tight pants, you know, I can imagine the process of putting on these tight pants. You know, and like I said, they have to identify with their moms. You know, I remember when I was a young man, saying my mama put on them tight jeans in the mirror, and I used to be like, "Mom, you know what you doing? You know what I'm saying? Why you gotta wear your jeans so tight? You know what I'm saying?" So I can imagine in their minds, they saying their mom putting on them jeans, and now they emulating their mamas, you know, with these tight jeans. So it's producing this feminine mentality. You know what I'm saying? This woman type mentality. You know what I'm saying? And so. And you have fashion designers, man, who create this image. You know, I want to say the man, and you know, and a lot of these fashion designers are homosexual. I'm saying they're gay men. And so we have these gay men like Dolce & Gabbana, Versace,
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You, Ralph Lauren, he's a heterosexual man, you know, so you won't really see his clothes like that. But a lot of these European designers, man, are homosexual. And so they're coming from a, you already coming from a thwarted, unnatural perspective. Because when I say thwarted and unnatural, because we know that it's natural for the brain to be wired to be attracted to the opposite sex. So when you're attracted to the same sex, that means the wiring is somehow miswired. You know what I'm saying? And so maybe the science, the nature versus nurture need to kick in, and they need to get the understanding on how that happened. But, you know what I'm saying, it's not natural in accordance with the sovereign laws, you know what I'm saying, of opposites attracting. So we see these, they want a man to look in the image of how they would like. And so now we're seeing they're making designer clothes, dresses for men, tight-fitting pants for men, shirts that cut off at the top to show only the navel for men.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? You have rappers, man. These rappers wearing UGG boots, which is a female boot, or the boot designed for females, wearing fingernail polish. You know what I'm saying? They put earrings in both ears. All things that was shown that men and boys shouldn't do that. And if a father was there, a father, a man would tell that child that, you know, don't do that. You know what I'm saying? That's not cool for a boy to do or a man to do, you know? And so being that male element is missing, and that's also through to, like you say, this crisis, this fear to see the black man in his proper position, then, you know, it constantly creates that feminization. It creates that crisis of emasculating the man, keeping the man in a subjective psychological state of submissive, you know, or in prison, you know, or strung out on drugs. You know, now they come with a whole new attack with designer drugs. You know, it's kind of crazy because you can see in every generation, yeah, it's the same thing, but it's a different expression of it. You see,
right.
In the 1900s, the early 1800s, you know, it was the alcohol, it was the liquor. You know, how to use the spring on a man. Then they used the jails and convict leasing. You know what I'm saying, or the chain gang. You know, to snatch the man up and get the man out the equation. Then in the 1960s, they came with the heroin. And then in the 80s, the crack cocaine. You know, now they have these new designer drugs, the Xanax and the Percocet pills and the codeine and all these things they're using to attack. But it's the same thing over, just a new face, a new name for it. So, and that's how the crisis perpetuates, because the crisis is the fear. You know, we go back to the fear is the man, the black man. You know, genetically, we've always been a strong people. We've always been a powerful people, powerful bloodline, you know, genetics. And so to have that black man awaken to his true state and have that true freedom, that true psychological concept of freedom, you know, freedom to be myself, to express myself, to have my culture, my way of living, expressing it from an African perspective, man, you know, the powers that be don't know how to take that. And so they do everything in their power. And they have been doing everything in their power, too. That's right. They're afraid of that. Always have been.
I think that was a beautiful breakdown. I mean, and at the end of the day, it comes back to that survival consciousness. You know what I'm saying? And that's why anything we do now, as far as from a psychological perspective, trying to, you know, develop and gain that freedom you're talking about, it has to be rooted in trying to heal, you know what I'm saying, some of the traumas, man, that, you know, we have experienced living in this wild country. You know what I'm saying? We as black people, man, have been conditioned to overlook and just adapt, you know what I'm saying? So we're not dealing with it. So you got so much mental health, so many mental health issues, you know, that pervade the black community, you know what I'm saying? And these are the triggers for the overeating, the drug use, the violence, all the things you talked about, you know, I mean, the hypersexualization, the homosexuality. I mean, all of these things, you know what I'm saying, can trace back, you know, to the trauma, you know what I'm saying? I think that's some real talk. I think culture has to be implemented as a solution. You know, people got to get back in tune with the root, you know, go back to what our ancestors were doing. Before we came over,
Yeah, man, to add on, the government giving women too much power. And that's another thing. There's a divide and conquer going on, too, in the whole family dynamics. We know that the man is the leader. You know, the woman manifests that leadership and teaching the women, I mean, teaching the babies, you know. And, you know, our whole family structure, that has been broken down, you know, due to us adapting to this new society and, you know, women getting educated and women going out in the workforce, you know, with it, you know, and for women of poverty, you know, okay, in order for them to get assistance, they can't have a man in the house. Or if the black man hasn't been, due to his social upbringing, he might not have the proper skills or education to get a job. That don't mean he's dumb at all. He just don't have the skills to compete in the workforce. So he may be unemployed, or he may get his means by some other means. He may get his money by some other means. But what this does in a woman's mind, being that she may have a little skills and she's in the workforce and she's getting a little paper, she begins to disrespect that man. You know what I'm saying? And she'll do this in front of that baby, you know, to make it somehow seem like she's the breadwinner, she's superior. And you even have men in these households, man, is being emasculated by a woman who's trying to exert some type of authority, but she has the support of the government, you know, and any time she can just kick this man out, you know what I'm saying, and looking down on this man because he don't have the certain skills to compete in the workforce. Don't mean he's stupid. It just means that due to his socialized upbringing, he was deprived of that, you know what I mean, because that's how they set it up, for you to be deprived of it so you can remain an economic slave and do what they want you to do.
Well, let me ask you this, bro, and I agree with what you're saying, but at the same time, in that motherfucking, excuse me, that relationship right there, we got to acknowledge also that the woman is the victim. You see what I'm saying? Because, see, that's a part of the survival consciousness I'm talking about. And see, the black woman had to adopt, you know, certain qualities and characteristics for survival in her own right, because she's been put in a position where she hasn't had the ability to have that male counterpart because of the attack on a black male. So it's forced the woman to be a hero, a superwoman. You know what I'm saying? And in the process, without the balance, she out of balance. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm going to tell you something, dog. Most women that I talk to, and this may be a controversial statement, but I know that most women I talk to want a strong black man in their life. Most black women want a strong black man in their life. You know what I'm saying? They don't want to have to be domineering. You know what I'm saying? They don't want to have to be always making the decisions. Sometimes they want a man to be like, yo, tell me what to do, and they can trust that he got their best interest at heart. You know what I'm saying? This nature, man. You know what I'm saying? I know that the American way tells us that, you know, at the end of the day, women can do whatever, and I know they can. And I'm not disrespecting that, but what I'm saying is there's a certain nature a woman has, a certain nature a man has. You know what I'm saying? And I'm saying that there's certain things a man wants. You know, there's certain things a woman wants. And women have been forced to have to take on the characteristics of men to survive. You know what I'm saying? And they're victims for that. You know what I'm saying? The so-called sapphire, as the European has characterized her. You know what I'm saying? The domineering black chick who emasculates her man. You know what I mean? But if a black woman hadn't, with the black male being so damn underdeveloped, if the black woman ain't strong enough, excuse me, 90 seconds, the black woman ain't strong enough to check this dude, you know what I'm saying? Then what's going to happen to her? You know what I mean? So she has to have a certain level of strength to be able to survive. You know what I'm saying? It's crazy, and this is where we're gonna pick this conversation up next week. This is a power joint. I think we need to go on a black violence, and we're gonna get to that, dealing with the gender warfare, you know, domestic violence with the man and the female, and the violence on black males perpetrated on each other. We're gonna tackle that because that's very important to understand in order to cure. We got 60 seconds. Free all political prisoners. Go to rhd.org, support Ms. K. Go to Starry Dance on Facebook. Check out the archives. Anything you got before we go, TrueSun?
Yes, sir. Then you go to TrueSun.com, support Operation Wake Up, and support the brothers behind the walls. You know, prison lives matter, you know, and really understand the social dynamics behind, you know, prison and brothers getting locked up, man. We want to do more to try to get our brothers home and our sisters home, you know, because it's sickness.
My message for the week is hope. Peace. Yeah, my message for the week is posting ain't activism. Get involved.
That's right.
Get in them streets, man. Posting ain't activism. There's peace to post, but we need you to pick up something, man, in them streets, man. Build some institutions. Be active, man. We at war. 10 seconds, man. I love you, bro. Peace to everybody that's listening. See you next week.
Peace. What's up?